T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
DGDG.com studios, high atop the San Francisco skyline. This is the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game. Now, Damon Bruce.
Welcome back to the Damon Bruce Show. It's good to be here this week. My only show this week because the A's are out on the East Coast. They just got thumped, kind of, in Baltimore. The thumping continued in Boston and hopefully will be over when Rich Hill takes the ball tomorrow in Tampa. We talk to A's GM David Forrest each and every Thursday. Glad we're on the air today to talk to him about what's going wrong with the Oakland A's. David, it's been a rough go of it. Let's start with a question I'm sure you've been looking forward to. How about them Warriors, huh?
Yeah, no kidding. I stayed up late watching them the last couple nights. That was a lot of fun. But, God, I have to apologize for your show being preempted for those three games out of Boston. That probably wasn't worth it, was it?
It was rough. It really, really was. I mean, I enjoyed the time off, but, I mean, it's kind of getting ridiculous here. The fourth straight loss with at least 11 runs allowed, that's a first in the 116-year history of the team in consecutive games. This, of course, your first season as GM, so congratulations.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, and you know, the fact is we did not do anything well in those three games, and you know, you stretch it back to the two previous games in Baltimore as well, we just haven't pitched well, and when your starting pitching doesn't give you a chance to stay in, let alone win games, it's really hard on everybody else, and obviously the bullpen has sort of worn it the last week, and it's kind of a cycle that you need to get a good start to break out of it, and we haven't gotten that, and you sort of put that on top of the injury issues. Obviously, the last 3 days, we've put Canna, Hendricks, and Lowry on the disabled list. Valencia misses a couple days with his hamstring acting up again, and Bob's got a short bench, a short bullpen. It's a really bad combination, and ultimately it leads to you getting thumped for three games, like you said.
We're talking with David Force here, GM of the Oakland A's. I appreciate your candor. I really do. I think Lowry being out of the mix is just brutal on you guys right now. He was one guy who's really swinging a good bat early in the season.
Yeah, Jed was brought back here, I should say, because of his bat and because of his ability to drive in runs, and he's done a really good job of that the first 6 weeks. So losing him as a switch hitting bat, can be in there every day, that one stings. But the reality is, the Coughlins and Valencias of the world have to pick up the slack, and we'll get Tyler Ladendorf in there, and you may see some other guys come up from Nashville. You know, that's what good teams do, is ultimately they pick up for one another, and we'll see if we're able to do that.
Your starters have lost 9 of 10, got an ERA over 8.5 in that stretch. And let's face it, I mean, the starting staff is just throwing unsustainable innings right now. They're killing your bullpen. Which concerns you the most, the failure of the starters or all the tax that's being put on your pen?
It's probably the latter right now, because I think we still have a lot of talent in the starting rotation. I mean, like you mentioned, Rich has pitched well, so that's been a bright spot for us. No one is doubting that Sonny is going to bounce back. He's had three rough ones in a row, but this is a guy who's an all-star, who's a top-of-the-rotation guy, a legitimate ace. He's going to bounce back. Kendall Graveman has shown he can succeed in the big leagues. And Sean Manaea has the stuff to do it. He powered through the minor leagues. You've seen him get swings and misses up here. He had, even in the games where he hasn't performed, he struck guys out. He just, for some reason, left a bunch of pitches in the middle of the plate the other night. So the talent is there in the starting rotation, and we're on the precipice here of getting Henderson Alvarez back in the next 10 days, so that's going to help. So I'm confident that they're going to pitch better, mostly because they can't pitch any worse.
Does Manaea stay when Henderson's back?
I think that remains to be seen. I mean, Jesse Hahn pitched a good game in Nashville this morning, so, you know, he's going to be back at some point. So I think we'll probably wait until Henderson's actually back to decide what that move is. But, you know, getting back to your original question, the long-term effect on the bullpen is probably the biggest concern. So, and that's the biggest reason we need to start getting, you know, 90 to 100 pitches and 5 to 6 innings out of our starters so that those guys can get back into their routines and their spots. I mean, look, pitching, having Ryan Dahl pitch in the third inning of any game is not a winning combination.
No.
So, you know, as good as Ryan was in May when he was pitching in the seventh, eighth inning and getting to those guys at the back, you know, we need to get these guys back in those roles.
Rich Hill, like you said, is one of the bright spots. He's got a 2.39 ERA this year. Really, his only poor start was when he was thrown into the opening day role because Sonny got food poisoning, was sick, whatever happened there. He's been a good signing for you, and hopefully we'll pick things up back in Tampa when you get going on this road trip again tomorrow. As good as he's been, everyone's still looking at Sonny and saying, is there anything wrong there? Is there any injury? Is there any tweak? Is there any discomfort that he has that we don't know about that you're going to tell us about right now in breaking news?
Well, first of all, he's physically 100%. Okay. There's absolutely nothing there. And it won't surprise you to know that we've spent a lot of our time this week here in the office and on the coaching staff, digging through video, digging through the metrics, looking at his pitch FX data, looking at all those things for differences, for issues. And, you know, I will say we've discussed a few things that we'll probably keep internal that Sonny needs to work on.
But you think you found something?
Not to give too much away,
sure.
But he has some things with his breaking ball and his fastball command that he needs to improve in order to get out.
It's an old keep the ball down situation, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Keep the ball in the park, keep the ball down, keep the ball in the strikes. There's a lot of things that everybody in the rotation can do, and that's why I expect them to improve.
How frustrated is Melvin right now?
You know, the great thing about Bob is how incredibly optimistic he is every day. I mean, and I think that's why our guys like playing for him so much is, you know, Bob believes we can win every single day he goes out there. So, you know, he's the right guy to lead this group and somehow figure out a way to get them out of it.
You know, you're 1-9 in the last 10 games, a run differential of -49. I mean, I appreciate the optimism. Only the last place Twins have a worse run differential in the American League right now. This is something that Billy and I would talk about all the time over the years that he and I had this conversation. And, you know, these numbers are ominous at best, David. I mean, let's just be totally honest here. And I really hoped it would take us a little longer into the season to get to any type of questioning like this. But, you know, you can't help but see the A's streak in the wrong direction and think sell-off could be coming.
Yeah, well, that's not something that we've talked about. It's kind of the best way I can put it. I mean, there's no doubt that we need to, you know, change direction and do it quickly. We've given up the most runs in the league by a lot, I think. So, yeah, and you mentioned the run differential. It generally doesn't lie. It's a good indicator of what's going on. So the reality is we can't continue in this direction much longer. So, you know, I'm going to remain hopeful that we turn things around, have a good series in Tampa, and then get home to play well in front of our crowd.
Harper should get games for an FU for an umpire, fair or foul.
I think what Bryce got was fair. You know, clearly he violated the rule that you can't come back on the field once you've been kicked out of the game. As far as his language and actions toward the umpire, I don't pretend to have the full story. I mean, everyone knows there's 1,000 cameras out there at all times, so you're not going to get away with that the way you once might have.
If swearing at a home plate umpire today costs you a game, how many games would Reggie Jackson have missed in his career?
Reggie Jackson was lucky to play when there weren't cameras out there.
You know, looking around the rest of baseball, everyone stopped to see Tim Lincecum in his workout. What did you see from the showcase? Did you have anyone down there monitoring? And are you surprised or not surprised that he's not being measured for someone's uniform right now?
We did have somebody there at the workout and got a full report back from one of our scouts. you know, I don't know if I'm surprised. I mean, it's a tough time of year. Teams are still trying to figure out what they are, similar to the way we are, and who the contributors are. So it's kind of a strange time to be signing somebody from the outside, and, you know, particularly from a money standpoint, too. A lot of teams push their budget to the limit just to get to opening day, and then you kind of have to create room for somebody like Timmy. So I don't know. I'm sure it won't be much longer. I've read that he's anxious to get out there, so be interesting to see where he lands.
When the A's are going in the wrong direction, how do you basically, you know, like, you do something bad to yourself? Are you like a chain smoker? Do you pity eat? Do you crush pints of Ben and Jerry's? Do you just throw down burrito after burrito? How do you basically self-imbibe when you're giving up 11 a game?
This is great. I can cancel my therapy session later. In all honesty, I am a stress eater. So
stress eater.
Yeah, if there are candy bars and ice cream around, forget about it. They're gone. But most of the time, I try and immerse myself in my kids and watch the game and then let it roll off so I can enjoy whatever time I have to spend with them. That's kind of the best therapy post-game.
With the number one overall pick in the candy bar draft, A's general manager David Force selects.
It's a Snickers. It's an easy pick. Hands down, it's the most satisfying one you're going to find out there.
Is that like a five-tool candy bar?
Absolutely. There's no question. I take Snickers first.
David, thanks an awful lot, man. Hopefully things start to turn around for you in Tampa starting tomorrow behind Rich Hill. Always appreciate you coming on. And when we catch up next week, let's be talking about a better run differential and a better week of baseball, all right?
That sounds like a perfect plan. Thanks, Damon.
Thank you. By the way, unfortunately, Gianna, I have to now report that the A's have traded that Snickers bar for a bag of peanuts and a whatchamacallit.
Not a good trade.
Not a good trade. You know what I might have taken first overall? It would have been a reach at number one. Probably could have had it somewhere in the top 10. I love the Take Five.
Oh, that is my second favorite. The chocolate-covered pretzel with a little peanut.
Yes. Salty sweet.
Oh, I'm a Butterfinger girl.
The A's have not been salty sweet. They've had Butterfingers in the outfield. They've been getting... Oh, I'm trying to come up with it.
They need a baby Ruth.
They've been betwixt, as far as their pitching staff is concerned. They need a little break off that Kit Kat bar. It's the series you've been asking for and demanding. It's A's and Rays beginning tomorrow on 95.7 The Game. We'll be right back.
Show on 95.7 The Game. We're back with the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
With all that we've missed this week, with me being preempted, I came in here with a list of things to talk about, and I hope I have time to get to all of it. And that includes the notion of the Las Vegas Raiders. Again, if I had a quarter for every time I heard the Raiders were about to do something in terms of moving or relocating everywhere, we would all be, how about this, we would be in Vegas right now, partying and celebrating. I'll get to that a little bit later on. There's a few more things I want to get to, and since we're just on the topic of baseball, we got to get to Maximus Scherzer, and what he did yesterday was remarkable. We just learned that A's GM David Force, though, would select a Snickers bar with the number one overall draft pick of a candy bar draft. And that's a good pick.
It's a solid choice.
There's no, you can't argue with that. You really can't. You want to go traditional, saying just the Hershey's chocolate bar should have gone number one overall. All right. But, you know, Snickers war and on-base percentage can't be argued with. You really
can't.
It's
top three.
So a guy on Twitter, Zach, says, Damon, sadly, Snickers has now given up 5 home runs since being selected by the A's. that's rough. But it would be true, and it would certainly correspond to what we have seen over the last handful of games. It has been a rough, rough go. The good news is you haven't faced Max Scherzer. Anyone who's done that lately has found very little success. Scherzer yesterday struck out 29 innings against the Tigers. It's one of the rarest feats in all of baseball. He's the fourth different pitcher to strike out 20 over 9 innings. Scherzer did it yesterday. Randy Johnson, the big unit, did it back in 2001. In a game that, I won't tell you that I was there in person, that would be stretching the truth, but the truth is, there isn't a single pitch of Kerry Wood's 1998 game against the Houston Astros at Wrigley that I didn't see. I watched that entire game on a day where I had a class, like it was a day game at Wrigley and I had a class. I was just wrapping up, you know, school. And I completely skipped it because I wasn't going anywhere. I'm like, this guy struck out 16 through like five innings. I'm not going anywhere.
You knew something special was happening.
I knew something special was happening. And that should have also been a perfect game, if not for Kevin Ori, who was charged with, that's the thing, it shouldn't have been a perfect game, because when a base runner reaches, obviously, you're no longer perfect. Should have been a no-hitter. Kevin Ori botched a ball. The first hit of the game should always be a clean hit. Kevin Ori, went to IU, botched a ball at third base. That should have been an error, but it was ruled a hit. He should have had a no-hitter with 20 strikeouts that day. But 20 strikeouts is really, it's like one of those holy grail things for a pitcher. Roger Clemens did it twice in 1996 and 1986. What's amazing is he does it right there. That is 10 years apart from each other. He had 155 pitches, 151 pitches in one of his 20. 151 pitches? That's amazing. They let Roger Clemens throw 151 pitches in 1996. If a pitcher threw 151 pitches right now, people would send an ambulance to go get him. By the way, we looked it up. What was it, 141 pitches? 148 pitches for Tim Lincecum in his last no-hitter over the Padres. The only reason that was allowed is because the Giants had made the organizational decision to move on from Tim Lincecum.
Right.
And they're like, if he throws his arm out, it doesn't even matter. We'll just let it, you know, just let it happen. It's kind of like when the, who was it? The Milwaukee Brewers picked up CC Sabathia for 3 weeks. They're like, okay, so all your games are going to be complete games and we aren't even keeping a pitch count. Good luck. So anyway, Max Scherzer now has three of the top four strikeout performances in franchise history, and he just joined the Nationals last season. He's only made 41 starts. 9 of his 20 strikeouts yesterday were three pitch at bats. Good morning, good afternoon, good night. So here you go. In baseball history, there have been 295 no-hitters, 23 perfect games, but only 5 people have ever struck out 20 in 9. And now Max Scherzer is one of them. Roger Clemens is 2 of them.
Wow.
It's amazing. Not 5 people, 5 games. It's happened in 5 games. 4 people, 5 games, Clemens twice. You want to talk about baseball rarities? That's one of the rarest things there is. It's only happened in 5 games. Meanwhile, 23 perfect games, 295 no-hitters. There have been 16 unassisted triple plays in the history of baseball. There have been 16 individual 4 home run games. How rare it is, in between Randy Johnson's 20 strikeout game in 2001 and Max Scherzer's yesterday, there were 46 no-hitter thrown. 46 no-hitters. 7 of those were perfect games. What's really ridiculous is Scherzer did it in 119 pitches. 119 pitches. Kerry Wood needed 122. Randy Johnson, 124. Clemens, 138 and 151. You know who all of this is to blame on? We found the guy. It's Brad Ausmus. This is all Brad Ausmus's fault. Don't believe me? Here's the evidence. Brad Ausmus has now been a member of the opposing team as a player twice, and now as a manager once, of 3 of the 5 occurrences where 20 strikeouts happened.
Wow.
In baseball history. He managed the Tigers Wednesday. He was the opposing catcher in Kerry Wood's 20 strikeout game and in Roger Clemens' 20 strikeout game.
That's weird.
It is all Brad Ausmus' fault. Numbers don't lie. If you are in 3 of something that's happened 5 times, that's officially now a large sample size.
Definitely.
That's on you, Ausmus. That is on you. Damon, Rocket was on everything under the sink. That's why he threw 151. Yeah, but everyone was back then. 1996? Oh, that's definitely, that is as juicy as Roger got. Very excited. We got a game 7 at home tonight for the Sharks. No team has dropped the game on the at home yet in this series. Hasn't happened. Home team has won all 6 games so far. The Sharks are 4-1 at SAP Center this postseason after not even having a winning record at home in the regular season. They were 18-20-3 at home during the regular season, which is why I have been sneezing at their Stanley Cup chances. That, and I just don't think that Patrick Marleau and Joe Thornton are ever going to skate for a Stanley Cup. I'd like to be wrong. I would. I would like to be wrong. They can prove me wrong tonight. A Stanley Cup Finals appearance would go a long way to rejuvenate some interest in Bay Area hockey. The problem with the San Jose Sharks is twofold. Number one, the Golden State Warriors have shown right. everybody the way. The second part is everyone who isn't a diehard Sharks fan sits down and says, I've read this book before, I know how it ends. Every season of Sharks hockey, you kind of know how it ends. If they were to lose tonight at home, I will have been right. I will have known how it ended. I would love to be wrong. Get to the Western Conference Finals. I freaking dare you. And then let's see what happens.
It's sold out tonight, right? Isn't this the first sold-out playoff game of the series?
No, that can't be. Is it?
I think so. Correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe we can look into that.
That can't be.
As far as I know, there were still tickets available in previous playoff games before the game was starting. So I don't know. I could be wrong, but I think tonight is sold out.
Well, there's always the tickets available, but it's still sold out type of thing. I can't believe the Sharks sell out pretty much every regular season game, even in a down year. I would imagine all the playoff games are sold out. I know one person who's going.
So.
I know one person who's going to be there. Bouton Vixon. Hopping on Caltrain soon. Going on down to the game. If you see her, tell her you're a big fan of the way she pushes a button like this.
The Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game. Ah! We're back with the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
That was really as competitive a 5-game series as you're going to see. Big tip of the cap to the Portland Trail Blazers. Good thing is, they're not good enough to hang with the Warriors, though. They tried, and it almost happened. You had Lillard and McCollum living up to their billing. You had Aminu and Crabbe playing out of their minds, giving you more than they thought, you know, either would give you in that series. And the Warriors were tested. They passed it and are now waiting to see who they'll be playing in the Western Conference Finals. We are about an hour away from what could be a deciding game when it comes to determining their opponent. We got Spurs with a must win in Oklahoma City coming up a little bit later on tonight. To talk about all of it, always happy to be joined by Ethan Sherwood Strauss from ESPN. Good to have you on, Ethan. Last night, it was a really odd, poorly officiated, choppy game, and the Warriors probably never even really found a rhythm until Steph put on that funky dribble drill on the last shot of the game. That was the most in rhythm any Warrior looked all night. Well, beyond Klay Thompson going off.
Yeah, I was about to say Klay Thompson was not bad during that stretch when everybody else was trying to get their sea legs. He was okay.
Do you think that people would have less disagreement about Klay Thompson is the best two guard in basketball than they would Steph Curry's the MVP? Because I can't believe what's being debated amongst the Yakkers today.
Well, I think in terms of that, there are just different interpretations of it because James Harden can do more things. He is capable of doing more things. And Jimmy Butler, when he's healthy, is perhaps capable of doing a few more things. So as a number one option, I can understand people saying that they'd rather want James Harden, especially the version of James Harden from before this season. But Klay Thompson, one of the reasons why he's so good for the Warriors is that he's okay being Klay Thompson. He's okay being the second option and doing some of the dirty work. I thought it was really interesting, actually, after the game at the press conference. The press conference was concluding. The media, everybody in the press conference room, they were starting to stand up. And as they were standing, Steph said, I just wanted to say something, and he went into his spiel about how we shouldn't forget about how great Klay Thompson was and how he had played the best series that that Steph had ever seen him play in, all the while guarding Damian Lillard for just massive stretches of these games. So I certainly think that Steph has an opinion on who the best two guard is and wanted to convey a little bit of that at the end of this series.
That's pretty cool. I tell you, Klay Thompson is averaging 27 points per game. Since the Warriors moved to the Bay Area, the only players to score more through 10 playoff games are Wilt, Rick, and Steph. So I guess we confer officially now one-name status of Klay on the Mr. Thompson.
It's funny. It's always so hard to know where to go with the first name versus last name. It's a very inexact science. On Twitter, I say Draymond instead of Green because Green, that's a name a lot of people have.
Right.
With Steph, I say Curry. Just because if I'm calling him by his first name a lot, then people are going to question my objectivity even more so. And on Klay, I say Klay because so many people have that Thompson last name, as one Marcus Thompson often reminds people that he's a member of the Klay Thompson family.
Are you an MVP voter, Ethan?
I am not an MVP voter this year. I am not. I was actually thinking how funny it would be if I just voted for somebody else, if I had the privilege of doing so, and just what would happen if I did that.
Well, you'd be the most talked about voter in America that day. I mean, there's no doubt.
And the most hated. And the most hated by far.
And because people have no trouble, some people have no trouble being hated from coast to coast, I'm really surprised that there wasn't some look-at-me vote for another player coming from another city, especially in the sport of basketball where people get very protective of their own. Were you as surprised as kind of I was that Steph was unanimous? I mean, it truly is an unprecedented moment.
Oh, I was shocked. I was totally shocked. I figured, especially because it's not just a look-at-me factor, it's also this other aspect where we have team employees voting on these awards. And if you don't vote for the guy on the team, then that guy might hate you, and you're just dealing with him, and you're on the team playing with him. This happens a lot. This happens quite a bit. I've heard of it happening where someone on the team is angry that the broadcaster or somebody else who has a vote didn't give them a vote, and it's an issue. So with that massive conflict of interest, I just assume that somebody would give a first-place vote to Kawhi Leonard or LeBron James or maybe even Kevin Durant. So I was surprised. I was totally surprised.
Ethan Sherwood Strauss here from ESPN. Good to have him on, talking a little hoops with him. And I had a caller earlier ask for, he asked me to Google information he could just Google himself. And I said, well, I'm not about to do that. And I certainly don't do math on the air. Is there a particular Steph Curry stat that you would frame above all else to explain why he was a unanimous MVP? I mean, I've got Harrison coming up at 5 o'clock, and you know, I really do believe that the default setting of NBA greatness is LeBron James, and you have to be an outlier in some sort of way to go beyond him in a particular year. The outlier that is Steph Curry's last two seasons is exactly good enough to beat LeBron James.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I have a specific number to get to. I mean, he had some insane streak of unblocked three-pointers that I thought was kind of significant, especially because so many were off the dribble. I guess it would be that he just scored more efficiently than anybody ever has, that he scored at a Michael Jordan rate more efficiently with a higher true shooting percentage than Michael Jordan ever did and than LeBron James ever did. So while I'm not smart enough and I don't have the command of the number memory to remember the exact percentages in relation to one another, that's what I would look to. It's just the efficiency. The efficiency is unlike anything we've ever witnessed.
What do you make of Bogut's abductor strain? Draymond, he's got an ankle tweak, but he can play. Like, he just flipped the I'm angry switch and played through that. I'm sure he can do that.
Yeah, it's a little concerning, but it also speaks to why it's so great that they got that win so they can get some rest. They were definitely in need of some. And it's an obvious storyline. It's funny. I was listening to people ask them questions about needing the rest, and I thought to myself, that is the pertinent thing, that they are getting rest. But man, is that a boring question. Like, man, is that a boring question in a press conference. You know, is this a good time for you guys to get rest? Yeah, we're looking forward to getting rest. It's not exactly as fun as Draymond Green saying, do I think the Blazers are done? Of course I think the Blazers are done. It's not as fun as that is, but it is pertinent and it is important that they're able to nurse some of these maladies.
Excuse me, Coach Kerr, do you have a newfound respect for Dame Lillard and the Portland Trailblazers?
fun if he says, no, he's kind of a bum. I feel like he dies on a lot of screens. He's got a ways to go. I thought it was funny when Draymond was asked if he respects the Blazers, like the Blazers want to be respected. And this is after game four, and he said, ask me on Wednesday. It's sort of insinuating that, no, I do not. But then when he was asked on Wednesday after winning, he gave a bunch of respect. So I think that Draymond's just sort of poking and prodding, and he's also perhaps playing some mind games. And after the battle is over, there's no real reason to continue to seem so disrespectful of the opponent.
When the battle continues next year, and again, while we're 8 wins away from a repeat, let's jump immediately to next season here, Ethan. Have we seen enough from Festus Ezeli to reconsider Bogut's place and role on this team?
I think the Warriors have, to be honest. If you were assured of Festus's health, it'd be a much easier call. I mean, that's the concern. You almost need both of them because you don't know when one is going to be out, and both have this injury history. But I think that Ezeli has been tremendous when he's played this season relative to expectations.
He can switch on the perimeter in a way Bogut can't.
True. And that's why he was a more useful defensive player against the Portland Trailblazers than Bogut was. But the Trailblazers are also just a different kind of team. There aren't many teams with two guys who can hit three-pointers off the dribble like that. So Festus's advantage over Bogut matters more. Bogut's also a savvier defensive player and I think a better rim protector at this point. But I enjoy the Festus Ezeli lineups a lot because they're big, but they have the force and the speed that a small ball lineup has. Obviously, Festus can't shoot three-pointers like those Draymond Green at center lineups and everybody can shoot from behind the arc. But he can, when you look at his combine sprint score, he can get up and down the floor like a wing or maybe even a guard. So those lineups play with a tremendous amount of athletic force. And so I personally think that the Warriors should bring him back. I'm not sure what the final number will be, but I think that's something that should definitely be a priority for them so long as they know and they think they can keep him healthy.
Ethan Strauss here on 95.7 The Game. Any doubt in your mind that the Warriors would like to see the Spurs force a Game 7, not just to continue to get more rest, but I think that they'd rather see. And if you asked me a year ago if I would say something like this out loud into a microphone, I'd say, no, I wouldn't say anything like that into a microphone. I think the Warriors might rather see the Spurs than the Thunder.
You're right. I mean, look, there are differences. We describe a team, we say the Warriors as though it's as unanimous as the MVP voting, and obviously there are differences of opinion within a team and an organization, but most of the people I've talked to in and around the Warriors regard the Thunder as a bigger threat. And part of that's just because the Spurs couldn't score on them. They couldn't score on them in the season series. Even when Andrew Bogut, Festus Ezeli, and Andre Iguodala, all key defensive guys, all of them were out, and they were at home in San Antonio, they still couldn't score. They won that game in part because Steph had this dreadful shooting game. So I think that the Warriors have, in some ways, cracked the code of how San Antonio goes about its offense. It's very A to B to C, and they disrupt that plan. Maybe there's a counter move. Maybe there's something that the Spurs haven't shown that they would show in the playoffs against the Warriors. But for that reason, just the very fact that there wasn't a time in the season series where the Spurs could consistently score at all, that right there is why the Warriors would rather see them than the Thunder.
They obviously move on over the Trailblazers. If they'd been going back to Portland for a game six, the entirety of today's show would be spent talking about officiating. Now, it's been poor historically. You know, we know that. And certainly there are a lot of dots throughout this postseason already of poor officiating. Last night, collectively, I think, was the biggest scoop of poor officiating I've seen in one single game in a really, really long time. The most egregious call in the world was the block on Draymond that was all arm, no ball. I mean, I saw that and I wear glasses from the top of the lower bowl, other end of the court.
You know, it's funny. Maybe I need to get glasses because I didn't in real time know that was such a foul. It obviously was such a foul. But it was on the opposite corner from where I was sitting, so I just thought that was a well-timed block.
You should have gone to Indiana. If you had gone to Indiana, you'd be able to just sense these things.
obviously. So that's my failing right there. Yeah, it wasn't a particularly well-officiated game. I do wonder, though, if there's something that the Warriors can do to influence officials. Because, you know, officials, by and large, they don't care. They don't care who wins. But if you annoy them and they find you annoying, they're human beings and they'll start to turn on you. I think that happens with the Clippers a bit, where they do so much complaining that the refs start giving them bad calls. And I do wonder that. It's obviously fantastic that Draymond Green brings such fire and passion, but he might be wearing on these refs just a little bit. Right?
I think so. He's begging for a tech. He's setting himself up for easy techs later on.
Yeah, and he's got four. I think he has four right now through the postseason and leads all players. So perhaps if they temper that a bit, and if Draymond tempers that a bit, the Warriors might be able to get some better calls going forward.
Hey, if the Thunder win tonight, I'll be seeing you Monday for Game 1 of the Western Conference Finals. If not, it'll be on Wednesday. So we'll see you soon. We'll see you next week. Ethan, thanks an awful lot.
Thanks so much for having me, Damon. Have a great day.
You do the same. Always good to talk a little basketball with Ethan, and it's always really good to talk with the Beverly Hills Rabbi. My rabbi would like to make a blessing. That's coming up next, and we got a little roster move for the Gigantes. Pitching's getting a little reinforcement. We'll let you know who next.
The Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game. Now, back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
Well, well, well. The San Francisco Giants have called up right-handed pitcher Clayton Blackburn from AAA Sacramento. We don't have a corresponding roster move made yet, but just shows you that, you know, not only are they desperate to score some runs, they're desperate for a little help somewhere, too, because right now Blackburn's hardly tearing up the minor leagues. He is 1-3 with an ERA over 5.5 and a whip of 1.71. None of those are good numbers. None of those are good numbers. He's given up 44 hits in 31 and two-thirds innings. He's given up 24 runs in 31 and two-thirds innings. None of this is blow-you-away impressive. So maybe a little bit of a reach. He's a guy who's been in the minor league system since 2011. I guess if you got something to show, let's see it now. His minor league career, however, has been pretty stellar. I mean, he's been good, just not having a particularly good year this year. A guy who is having a good year this year is the Beverly Hills Rabbi. We're great grateful that he joins us once again with his blessings for the Warriors and Steph Curry, and he takes full credit for all the success. How are you, Rabbi?
Oh, David, so good to hear you. You know, I was back east for Passover. It's brutal watching these games past midnight, you know, back on the East Coast.
Oh, yeah. You got to stay up late if you want to catch a four-quarter West Coast basketball
game.
Right,
and I must admit that, I didn't stay up for all the Warriors games. I'm scared. I mean, it's my blessings that are helping them, but they're giving up a lot of points.
But here's the thing, it's a survive and advance situation, and they are surviving the challenges put in front of them now. It's going to get even harder in the Western Conference Finals. Would you like to bless either the Spurs or the Thunder to set up an opponent?
I heard you say that. Let me think for a moment there. I do want to challenge you. You saw you were at the Kerry Wood game when he had...
I watched it. Wasn't there. I watched it, though.
Oh,
the entire thing.
You said, though, he had 16 strikeouts through five innings.
I did. Well, that was wrong. I was just trying to illustrate the point that he was striking out the world, and I wasn't about to leave my couch.
Catching you in your mouth. Okay, there. Now, Brad Ausmus, that was a good thing. I wasn't aware of that. That was terrific. You know, the reason for him being involved in so many of those games?
Well, he's a Tiger, and the Tigers have been involved in a lot of these games.
And more than that, he's an MOT.
Oh, is it?
Uh-huh.
Well, you think he'd be a little bit more thrifty then, with all
this? Well, could be. What was the record before 20? You remember that when I was growing up?
I don't even know.
It
must have been 19, right?
The record was 18, and then somebody came with 19, and now 20. I mean, so you never know, records that can never be beaten. Somebody's going to 27, and that would be impossible.
By the way, I can see the confusion on Gianna's face over here. MOT, member of the tribe.
I figured as much.
Okay, that's great. He's well represented here in the scoreboard.
Nice. Well, so here's the deal. So we got to get going because we're at the end of the hour. Let me tell you who could use a blessing more than anyone else out there. It's the San Jose Sharks tonight. I don't know if your guy does hockey. Let's see how it works.
It's guaranteed. You spoke about him. You gave him your blessings when you said, they're going to win tonight. No question.
I didn't say that. I said they probably lose. Historically, they lose. I would not bet on the Sharks to win this game tonight.
I give them my blessing. No question. The Sharks, okay.
There you go.
They have it all the way, and we'll speak next week.
Thank you very much. He is the rabbi. Not to be confused with any old rabbi. He is the Beverly Hills rabbi.
Fancy.
Good to have him. Let's go to Olivia in Concord to wrap up the hour. We've got Harrison Barnes kicking off, or I should say tipping off, next hour to keep it sports appropriate. Olivia, how are you?
Hey, I'm fine. So I want to find out, like right now, is Gianna still there? Is she there?
I'm right here.
She's right here.
Hi, Gianna. Hey.
Hi.
I'm not trying to exclude anyone, but I want to make sure that you're there. I want to know both of your takes. If Warriors hit, you know, the Thunder right now, or even any other team, I don't even care who they are in NBA, would you guys put your $5 on the pass line for the Warriors right now to win, regardless of anything?
Oh, I have been saying that this is already over. I mean, we just got to play out the games as a formality here. But
this is the easiest
repeat champ to see coming in a real long time. I really think that. I'm not trying to be cocky here, but basketball gets dominated.
No, you're good. And this is what I was saying before. I mean, weeks ago when people were like, Steph and the knee and ooh and the ankle. I said, okay, check it. They can come up. It doesn't matter. This is a premier team regardless. And I just wanted to find out if you guys, like your own gut, not
all in.
For radio
100%.
Or for anything.
All
yeah.
in.
I bet $100. I'd up that $5 to $100.
Yay! Well, I'm going to bet $87.15 because that's all I have right now, but okay.
There you go. Wrap it up. Forget about feeding
Thank
the
you.
Family, feeding yourself. You put all that money on the Golden State Warriors and watch it double.
That'll work. She'll feed more people that way.
Sure thing. Got to wait 2 weeks, 3 weeks for the results, but, you know, just bread and water until then. You know what would have cost me a ton of money, all my money a few years ago, if you could rewind time and say, all right, every penny you've ever made, any penny you ever will make, who will win a title first, the San Jose Sharks or the Golden State Warriors? I would have put it all on the Sharks without hesitating, without blinking, and I would have bragged about the easy money that I was guaranteed to make.
Right.
What a role reversal.
Oh, big time.
So we'll see if the Sharks can reverse what has been historically something that's defined the franchise. Spitting the bit when the gambling gets really expensive. Hopefully they get it done. I'll be surprised if they get it done. I'll be happy if they get it done. I don't want to be right about Thornton and Marlowe. I have been up to this point, though. Good luck to you, Sharks. They're going to be live at 6 o'clock tonight, right here on 95.7 The Game. But coming up next, Harrison Barnes.
The Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.